The Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're digging into a book that honestly changed the game for how people think about success, not just in sports, but, well, everywhere.
Yeah, we're talking about Michael Lewis's Moneyball, The Art of Winning an Unfair Game.
And, you know, if you think this is just going to be a chat about baseball stats, think again.
Definitely. This is really the blueprint for shaking up an entire industry. The core idea in Moneyball is pretty straightforward. If you don't have the money to buy the top talent, you have to figure out how to buy wins.
Right. It's the story of how you can go head-to-head with rivals who have, what, 3 or 4 times your budget?
Easily. And beat them simply by thinking differently and questioning, well, pretty much every assumption people hold dear.
Exactly. So the setup is the Oakland A's, small market team, tiny payroll in Major League Baseball terms.
One of the lowest.
Pitted against these financial powerhouses like the New York Yankees, who could just spend whatever they wanted.
The A's couldn't afford superstars in the traditional sense.
So they had to completely redefine what a superstar actually was.
Yeah.
What produced value.
And that's why it's still so relevant, isn't it? It's a matter of what field you're in.
Not at all. Lewis gives us this brilliant parable, really, about logic and hard evidence winning out over just how things have always been done.
Over intuition, over prejudice, all that ingrained stuff. It's kind of an essential guide for spotting and exploiting those hidden inefficiencies you find in any competitive situation.
Okay, so let's get into it. Maybe start with the author, Michael Lewis, because his background is key to understanding his angle here.
Yeah, Lewis is known for making complex topics really gripping, right? Turning them into these character-driven stories. But he's not your typical sports journalist.
Not at all. Tell us about his background.
Well, he went to Princeton, then the London School of Economics. And his first job, famously, was as a bond salesman at Salomon Brothers.
Which he wrote about in Liar's Poker.
Exactly. And that time on Wall Street. It's absolutely crucial for understanding Moneyball.
It gives him this, like, financial lens to view everything through. So he sees baseball not just as a sport,
but as an inefficient market, a financial market where the product being traded is player talent.
And the traditional experts, the scouts, they're like the old school stockbrokers.
Precisely. Relying on gut feelings, subjective impressions, maybe even how a player looks, driven by emotion, biases.
While Billy Bean and his guys, they were the quants, the quantitative analysts, using data.
Right, using data to find market arbitrage.
Okay, maybe just quickly explain arbitrage in this context for anyone not familiar.
Sure. It's basically finding something that's priced lower than its actual worth. In baseball, the market, meaning all the teams, was systematically undervaluing certain skills or statistical outputs.
So the A's found players, these undervalued assets, that everyone else was ignoring because they didn't fit the mold.
And that created this huge opportunity, not for financial profit, but for wins on the field. They were exploiting a market inefficiency.
Lewis was just the perfect person to chronicle this, wasn't he? He specializes in showing how these disruptive ideas totally reshape industries.
Like finance in The Big Short, or even talent evaluation in The Blind Side.
He's brilliant at using one specific industry here, baseball, to teach these universal lessons. About economics, about how our own thinking can be flawed, about making better decisions.
So that Wall Street perspective really frames the whole 2002 season. It's not just a sports narrative. It's like the ultimate test of this financial theory playing out in real time.
And the book mainly follows that season, right? The Oakland A's, tiny payroll.
Yep, one of the lowest. And they somehow win 103 games.
Which matched the Yankees, the super rich Yankees.
And they had that incredible 20-game winning streak, which just blew everyone's minds.
But the core thesis, the big idea Lewis proves, is really quite, well, damaging to traditional thinking.
It really is. It's that the collective wisdom, the stuff passed down for generations by the insiders in any field, it's often just deeply systematically wrong.
So the general manager, Billy Bean, he just threw out the old subjective scouting methods.
Completely. And embraced objective data-driven analysis, this field called sabermetrics.
Okay, let's pause there. Sabermetrics. What exactly is that in simple terms?
Sabermetrics is essentially using math and empirical evidence to analyze baseball performance, looking at what actually contributes to winning games.
So instead of trusting a scout's gut feeling or some age-old tradition,
Bean trusted the numbers. What the data proved led to runs and therefore wins.
Now, the strategy that emerged from that was pretty radical.
Absolutely. It was about systematically finding and acquiring the specific statistical components that produce runs and doing it as cheaply as possible.
So they weren't trying to buy players who looked flashy or fit the traditional superstar mold.
No, they were trying to literally buy runs,
yeah.
Find the statistical ingredients for scoring.
And when they crunched the numbers, what did they find was the most undervalued skill?
The ability to simply get on base. On base percentage, or OBP. That became their mantra.
Why OBP?
Because making an out is incredibly costly in baseball. Getting on base, whether by hit or walk, keeps innings alive and creates scoring chances. And the market just wasn't valuing that skill properly compared to, say, hitting home runs or stealing bases.
So they looked for players who were great at getting on base, even if they looked flawed in other ways.
Exactly. Players overlooked for all sorts of superficial reasons. That was the inefficiency they exploited.
So the book ends up appealing to, anyone interested in how real change happens, right? How innovation can beat entrenched interests.
And how you cut through all the noise, the information overload, by focusing ruthlessly on the few things that genuinely matter.
It's just such a powerful case for having the courage to trust analysis over decades of bias.
Definitely.
Okay, let's dive deeper into the story itself, because Lewis makes the human drama really compelling. He starts in the draft war room, doesn't he? 2002 draft.
Yeah, it's a fantastic scene. It immediately sets up this clash of cultures, this conflict between two ways of seeing the world.
You've got the old guard, the experienced scouts.
The grizzled guys, yeah. Relying on intuition. They're talking about how a player has a good face or a baseball body.
A good face.
Seriously. Seriously. Or how the ball sounds coming off that. They're literally debating aesthetics.
And across the table, you have Bean and his assistant, Paul DePodesta, who was like, fresh out of Harvard.
Armed with spreadsheets and statistical projections, basically ignoring all that traditional scout talk.
But hang on a second. These scouts, some have been doing it for 40 years. Surely that experience, that intuition, counts for something. Was Lewis just saying it was totally worthless?
Not worthless, maybe, but systematically biased. Lewis shows their intuition was trained to value things that looked good, things that fit the traditional mold, but didn't necessarily correlate strongly with actual wins.
And Bean's motivation for challenging this.
Yeah.
It was personal, wasn't it?
Deeply personal. Lewis explains that Bean himself was the dream prospect coming out of high school, looked amazing, had all the tools, the five-tool player everyone drooled over.
But he failed.
Flamed out spectacularly in the major leagues. And that failure was absolutely critical.
Because it made him deeply skeptical of the very system that had hyped him up.
Exactly. He learned firsthand that looking the part, having those traditional tools, didn't guarantee production. It made him question everything the scouts valued.
Okay, so if the old system was flawed, where did the new objective system come from?
Well, the intellectual groundwork was laid by this outsider figure, Bill James, the godfather of sabermetrics.
And he wasn't even in baseball initially, right?
No. He started out working as a night watchman, a security guard in a factory, I think. And in his spare time, he started analyzing baseball stats just out of curiosity.
And what did he find?
He used data to prove that many of the traditional stats everyone obsessed over, like batting average or runs batted in, RBIs, were actually pretty poor predictors of team success.
Wait, batting average? Everyone tracks that. Why was it misleading?
Because, for example, a player could have a decent batting average but make a lot of outs trying to hit home runs.
Right.
Or RBIs often depend more on the players batting ahead of you getting on base. James argued you needed to look deeper.
Hey, what specifically?
He argued that the single most important offensive currency, the thing the traditional stats often missed, was simply not making an out. Every out you make kills a potential rally. It's a precious resource.
Ah, okay. So getting on base, even via a walk, which doesn't boost your batting average, is incredibly valuable because you haven't made an out.
Exactly. And the baseball establishment for decades had undervalued walks and overvalued things like stolen bases or batting average that looked more exciting but weren't as efficient in producing runs.
So that's the market inefficiency again, caused by this ingrained bias towards traditional flashy skills.
It's a perfect example of institutional bias creating an opportunity. James provided the theory, the mathematical proof. Bean and DePodesta were the ones who said, okay, let's actually use this to build a team.
Which brings us to the players they actually acquired. The Island of Misfit Toys, as they were sometimes called.
Yeah, this is where the theory gets tested in the real world. They deliberately targeted players the rest of the league saw as flawed, damaged goods, or just plain weird.
Let's talk specifics. Scott Hatteberg is a great example.
Phenomenal case study. Hatteberg was a catcher, but nerve damage in his throwing arm meant he basically couldn't throw anymore. His catching career was over.
A fatal flaw, you'd think.
For any other team, yes. But the A's looked at his stats and saw one thing. The guy had an elite on-base percentage. He knew how to draw walks and get hits.
So what did they do?
They signed him cheap and told him, "You're going to learn to play first base," a position he'd never played professionally. They bought his OBP, his undervalued skill, and figured they could work around the limitation.
Incredible. Who else? There's that pitcher with the weird delivery.
Chad Bradford, the submarine pitcher.
Yeah.
Threw sidearm, almost scraping his knuckles on the ground that looked ugly. Scouts hated it. But his underlying numbers, his effectiveness against hitters, were fantastic. Because the weird delivery messed with hitters' timing and perception. He was statistically dominant but aesthetically displeasing, which made him affordable.
They found value where others saw ugliness.
Exactly. And they did it with aging veterans, too, like David Justice.
Right. A former star, but older.
Yeah. Other richer teams basically paid part of his salary just to get rid of him, figuring he was washed up. But the A's data showed his OBP, his ability to get on base, was still really high.
They didn't care about his age or his declining power numbers?
They cared about the one statistic they valued most, OBP. These players were like living proof that the market was fundamentally misjudging talent based on subjective factors.
And the payoff was that 2002 season. The 103 wins, the 20-game streak.
Which was just the ultimate, undeniable validation of the whole Moneyball theory. This team, assembled on a shoestring budget using these unconventional principles, performed like a well-oiled, efficient machine.
But Lewis points out they still lost in the playoffs. Right.
Yeah.
There's still an element of chance in short series.
Absolutely. Baseball playoffs are notoriously unpredictable. But the real victory, the lasting legacy, wasn't just that one season.
It was that the rich teams couldn't ignore it anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Boston Red Sox, historically big spenders, saw what the A's did. They hired Bill James himself as an advisor. They embraced the analytical approach.
And they won the World Series in 2004.
Using Moneyball principles. That's when the revolution was really cemented, when the establishment basically admitted the outsiders were right. It became the new orthodoxy across the sport.
Okay, so let's pull back and think about the bigger themes here. What can we all take away from this, outside of baseball? First one seems obvious, challenging conventional wisdom.
Oh, absolutely. The A's were basically attacking dogma. And the established system, the scouts, the old guard, they fought back hard because the new ideas threatened their authority, their expertise, their very identity. It's a classic pattern. So the reflection for you listening is, where in your work or even your life are you just following a process because that's how we've always done it?
Good question. Second theme, market inefficiency and finding hidden value.
Lewis masterfully shows that any market involving human judgment, whether it's stocks, talent, whatever, is prone to irrationality and bias.
And that creates opportunities, arbitrage, like you said.
Right. So look around in your own world. What skills, what qualities, what opportunities are being ignored or undervalued by everyone else? If your industry obsesses over one thing, like a specific university degree,
there's probably value hidden somewhere else they're missing.
Exactly. Find the undervalued asset.
Third theme. Redefining talent and success. This feels crucial.
Yeah, the A's shifted the goal. It wasn't collect talented-looking players. It was buy wins. And to do that, they broke down winning into its core measurable statistical components.
Like OBP.
Like OBP. So the takeaway is, are you actually measuring the right things? Are you focused on the objective output that matters, or are you distracted by subjective appearances, like that scout looking for a good face?
Measure performance, not just pedigree or potential.
That's the transferable lesson. Focus on the measurable result.
And lastly, the underdog's advantage. Being constrained can actually spark innovation.
Right. The A's low budget wasn't just a handicap, it was the catalyst for their creativity. It forced them to be smarter, to find unconventional solutions.
Solutions the rich teams, who could just throw money at problems, never even had to consider.
So think about your own constraints, maybe time, budget, resources. How can those limitations actually push you towards a more innovative, maybe even superior strategy?
Yes, a powerful reframe. Now, the book is packed with memorable lines that really capture the philosophy. You mentioned one earlier about buying wins, not players.
Yeah, it's so clear. The goal shouldn't be to buy players. The goal should be to buy wins. And in order to buy wins, you need to buy runs. It just forces that complete mental shift.
from focusing on the individual parts to focusing on the overall outcome.
Precisely. Judging the result, not the raw ingredients.
And what about that really simple phrase they use to cut through all the noise when evaluating players?
The ultimate mantra, he gets on base.
So simple, but so powerful.
It's just represented this radical simplification. Cut through all the subjective arguments about a player's speed or power or looks and focus laser-like on the one key undervalued metric.
And Lewis has that quote that really nails the institutional resistance, and it goes way beyond baseball.
Yeah, this one hits hard. There is a bias against understanding in professional baseball. There is a bias against understanding in every organization.
Wow, a bias against understanding.
It perfectly captures why change is so hard. New objective insights often threaten the power structures and the identities built on the old ways of doing things. People resist understanding when it challenges their status.
Okay, let's make this really practical. How can listeners apply this Moneyball thinking in their everyday lives? Let's start with, say, hiring or managing a team.
Okay. Well, you'd prioritize objective, performance-based measures over the traditional stuff. Instead of relying just on an interview or where someone went to college.
Which are often really subjective.
Right. You'd look for hard evidence of relevant skills. Maybe through skill tests, work samples, looking at past performance data. You're trying to find your equivalent of the high OBP player, the person whose data shows they produce results, even if they don't fit the conventional mold.
Makes sense. What about in business strategy or investing?
It directly maps onto value investing, really. Use data analytics to find undervalued assets, overlooked market segments. Where is the market mispricing something based on perception rather than fundamental value?
Find the intrinsic worth that the market isn't seeing yet.
That's the core idea. Look for the numbers, not the narrative.
And even on a personal level. Personal development.
You can turn that analytical lens on yourself. Stop chasing goals just because they look impressive or because everyone else is. Figure out what metrics actually correlate with success or happiness for you in your chosen path.
And then focus your energy there on generating that specific output.
Yeah. Be ruthless about what truly matters versus what just looks good.
So wrapping up, what was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you from revisiting Moneyball?
For me, I think it's just how powerfully Lewis demonstrates that systematic analysis can consistently beat intuition, even the intuition of seasoned experts. It's a stark reminder that ignorance, or maybe willful ignorance, is often more dangerous than a lack of knowledge. Always question the assumptions.
Yeah, that really resonated with me too. My biggest takeaway is probably the power of the outsider perspective. Bill James, Billy Beane. They succeeded because they weren't steeped in the industry's dogma.
They came at it with fresh eyes.
Yeah, exactly. It shows that real breakthroughs often happen when someone questions the fundamental rules everyone else takes for granted. That radical objectivity, combined with courage, can change everything.
A great lesson to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecatra Foundation.